Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Happy Thursday, Right Here in Mass listeners. Joining us today is Jen Reed, the founder of BASE, your capital confidant that believes in the power and pricelessness of financial education. BASE takes an unbiased approach to money management coaching that's entirely unlike your typical financial advisor, understanding that there's a lot of emotion attached to money. Through Jen's expertise, she works with her clients to provide actionable steps to financial ability in order to achieve personal goals and shift your whole mindset around money along the way. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
It's my pleasure. Please share more with our audience about you and what you do.
Yeah, I am a Mass resident, born and raised, grew up in Central Mass, and now live just right outside Boston. And through lots of ups and downs and twists and turns in my own personal life and career journey, I was led to the financial world as I was trying to manage and figure out how to do my own personal finances. And it was really just one of those moments of realizing that there was kind of this gap in the financial industry and trying to understand how to pay off my own debt and invest and learn how to save. And it led me to kind of this role that I'm at now, after a couple of different big financial firms and just learning the industry a little bit more. And now I love supporting clients one-on-one, helping them really just learn how to manage their money, educate them more on investing and options and opportunities that are available for them as well.
And I love that you had a few different stops in your career journey before getting where you are today. And so I'd love if you could share with our listeners how your career has shifted throughout time and also what that gap was that you noticed in the financial industry that inspired you to start BASE and become your own boss in that aspect.
Yeah, so I started off in the construction industry, which was very fun and interesting, but I knew it wasn't for me. I did love the numbers through that process. So that was kind of that first hint of like, oh, finance numbers actually kind of spark some interest for me. And then was still just kind of on that journey of like, what do I really want to do with my life? And ended up at a couple marketing firms. That was when I was like, at kind of a rock bottom to where I was like, I cannot do this job anymore. How can I get out of it? But I was so tied to the paycheck that was, you know, coming from my salary and the benefits and everything like that. So that was kind of the real moment where I was like, how do I actually manage my money and like find the way out in this? And in the process, I was figuring like, well, might as well talk to a financial advisor, right? Like that makes sense. I'm struggling with my finances. I need some help figuring out how to, you know, get out of this job. And no one would really talk to me. Or if they did talk to me, they weren't talking to me about like how to actually manage my money or pay off debt or buy a car or anything like that. They were either looking for a large amount of money for me to invest with them, or they were trying to sell me products. And at that time, I wasn't in the spot for either one of those. I really just needed that like emotional support to learn to budget, learn how to like understand expenses, learn how to have the like accountability and that habit building piece that's really more that day-to-day financial management, not the like, oh, let's have a conversation once a year and see how you're doing. So in that process, I quit my job and started babysitting part-time and was like doing the whole DIY financial journey on my own, whether it was taking certifications, courses, just kind of trying to learn it on my own. And that like babysitting piece of my journey kind of allowed me to also do some internships and some cool co-ops with like financial companies to really learn the industry a little bit more, and ended up at some big financial firms trying to figure out how to design my financial track that I wanted to be on and who I wanted to help, which ultimately just led to me starting my own financial firm and kind of being able to design the company and the way I serve clients the best way I know how.
I love that. And I love that a lot of what you focus on, like you had mentioned, in between budgeting, expenses, knowing how to hold yourself accountable and building those habits. I mean, that's all money management stuff that a lot of people say, and I also believe in, should have been taught in school, but wasn't. And so I love that you're using your business to connect with people to teach them about these crucial life skills that will support them for throughout their entire life and for years to come.
Yeah, I truly wish it was something that was taught in high school or college. And just even understanding when you're going, you know, to have a conversation about a salary, like what that salary even need to be by the lifestyle that you want to live. Or if you're going to start a business, what do you actually need to make, or how much do you need to charge your clients in order to be able to support the lifestyle that you want to live?
Absolutely. And I also love that you mentioned the part about money have bringing out a lot of emotions in people, because I feel like just from what I've read and also from what I've experienced myself is that we often, or people often, inherit the thoughts about money that their parents had or that like older generations had about money. And so like those money stories ultimately kind of follow them throughout their life. And if they see their parents kind of being really cautious with money and not wanting to take risks and being really spend diverse, people end up inhabiting those traits and whatnot as well.
Yeah, money is so emotional. It is more emotional than it is the actual numbers sometimes. I mean, just thinking about like impulsive spending or understanding like fears and doubts or thoughts around debt is a huge one that I deal with all the time. And there is really like a huge generational influence that is happening around our habits around money. And most financial advisors, I won't say all, but like a lot of them are really just focusing on the actual numbers and how you're investing and what your savings rate is, and not paying enough attention to the fact that even if someone is a multimillionaire, they could still really struggle with being frugal or cheap because they have, you know, parents that were from the Great Depression, other things that are coming up that have happened, whether it was a layoff or someone got really sick, that are influencing that need to kind of have scarcity and lack in their life. And I think that's something that I work on a lot with clients, is that either scarcity lack mindset or that overabundance YOLO kind of mindset too.
Yeah. And I think that's really interesting, because I know I definitely have a scarcity mindset. And sometimes what helps me is just like physically looking at the numbers and looking back at the data and everything, and kind of like proving myself wrong, I guess is the best way to put it. But when people get in that mindset, it can be so hard to break that narrative that you're telling yourself and kind of rewrite it ultimately to a direction that's actually true, rather than just kind of thinking of these stories in your head that may or may not actually be true in this instance.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We're not looking at the layer underneath at all half the time. And I think that's the conversation I have with a lot of clients, is what is the story you're telling yourself, or where is this coming from? And making them pause really quick and check themselves and see what the actual emotions beneath the surface are like bringing up.
Right. And the example that you gave about some financial advisors, like for example, working with a multimillionaire who has a ton of money and wants to invest, but doesn't exactly know about like expenses and stuff like that, it almost feels counterintuitive to me, because it's like, how can this person who doesn't actually, who's never really been taught the foundations of money, now wants to invest all of this money? Like, I kind of feel like you need to start from the ground, which it sounds like what you do with your clients, and then work your way up.
Yes. So it is interesting that a lot of wealth management firms and investment advisory firms are looking for people with a lot of money. And it is true that some of them do lack the foundational skills. You will see many, I mean, clients that I have who make millions of dollars a year, and they still wonder at the end of the year where it's all going. You know, they're still maybe saving 5 or 10% and it's going to that advisory firm, which is great, but they haven't still been taught the skills of managing the day-to-day stuff or even understanding where money's going and having that clarity and data in front of them.
Absolutely. And so for anyone who's listening who might be in that same exact position where they don't know where their money is going or they don't even really understand the day-to-day aspect of their finances and of their money, what would you recommend to them that they do as kind of that first step in going in the right direction?
Yeah, so I'm going to say a dirty word that most people will not like. It's called a budget. And my first recommendation would be, if you don't like the word budget or it feels restrictive, switch it to something else. So whether it's cash flow management or just understanding where money's going or your spending plan, switch it up a little bit. But really sitting down and understanding what your expectations are for the month and the year, because the year does fluctuate. It's not just a fixed month. Every month's going to be exactly the same. It's going to be up and down when the holidays come, or I don't know about you, but I'm in wedding season right now where it seems like everybody in my life is getting married.
Yep.
And we have to plan for that. Or there's going to be some months where we didn't, you know, think about the travel that was coming up and things like that. So really just understanding the overall expectations and then going back and being able to sit down and actually review what happened. So there is the planned and the expected versus the actual, and understanding where that gap is as well and how on track you really were.
I think that's a great way to approach it. And like you said, knowing that it can change over time and change throughout the year. And so not kind of encouraging people not to just stick into one space, but instead kind of look at it from a bird's eye view and understand that things can for sure fluctuate.
Yeah. And being okay with that too. It's really hard to sit there. And I mean, I come from an athletic background, so it's really hard to not pull that perfectionism and kind of elite athlete mindset where you're like, it's got to be perfect or I'm not doing it at all, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing that it's going to fluctuate and there's going to be changes, and that's okay.
Absolutely. And so I know that we've kind of hinted at this and I had mentioned it in your bio, but you have a very unique approach to money management. And so I know we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but I'd love if you could share more about that and how you came to develop your program that you offer to your clients.
Yeah, so I think the financial advisor background and being in that space has really helped me get clarity and understanding on the simplicity that comes with investing in savings and planning, but how traditional ways of handling money and finances makes it seem like it's complex and we have to kind of wait until we have all our crap together to enter it. And I think simplifying it down and being able to have easy conversations that are simple and actionable and that really create a high touch space for clients, which that was kind of what I also really felt was lacking when I was at these larger firms, is I would see my clients maybe once every 6 months, and so much had changed in such a short period of time, and all the planning that we thought we're gonna do kind of flopped. And yeah, Now you have to readjust and reevaluate, and it becomes a longer process. Where now, what I really have found valuable is I meet with my clients at least once a month, and maybe it's 20 minutes, maybe it's 45 minutes, but we're talking and we're working through the homework items and the action items, and they're keeping me updated on what's going on in their life. I just had a client where we thought we were doing one thing one month, and then 2 weeks later her bathroom flooded and plans switched. And we then had to readjust and like decide how we were going to use her emergency fund, but also make her feel okay with using the emergency fund because that's what it's there for. So it's really giving my clients the support and that visibility with me where they can talk through scenarios and feel good about the different moving parts that we have going on. And some meetings are sexy and some meetings aren't. Like, it just depends on it depends on the month.
Absolutely. And I think you nailed it, because I think with a lot of financial planning firms, unfortunately, it can feel like a very transactional relationship where, like you said, meeting with clients once every 6 months or even once every year. And in those 6 months or 12 months, so much can happen. And so it can really be difficult to have an accurate financial plan if you're not kind of touching base on a consistent basis and being able to share the latest updates and adjust the plan accordingly. So I think it's amazing that you do have that really close relationship with your clients and can be flexible and help them be flexible with changing things as different things happen in their lives.
Yeah, thank you. It's been something that I've kind of found helps in the long run, at least in the beginning too, when you're getting to know someone, right? It doesn't, you don't want your finances to feel transactional. You want to feel like the person you're talking to understands your goals and understands what's going on, and like the chaos of your life, right? I mean, there's a lot going on and there's a lot of different things that you can talk about in a short amount of time without even covering, you know, everything that you want to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so one of the things too that I think is really important is being able to have goals. So you talk about this on your website. You have a bunch of different goals that people might have, whether it's buying a house or saving for a wedding or building up a 401k, whatever it might be. But sometimes I wonder if people come to you or think about working with some type of money management educator or coach, and they just don't even know what types of goals they want to set. So they might feel a little bit overwhelmed, or they're like, I don't even know what I want to achieve with my money. So if someone comes to you in that aspect and they're not really sure how they want to use their money or what they want to achieve with it, what would you recommend they do to kind of help figure that out?
Yeah. So, I mean, I have a series of questions that I usually will ask, just even like very high level, like, well, where do you want to be in your health? Or what would that look like if, you know, you started being at that level 10 in your health category of life? Would it be having a personal trainer? Maybe you're adding a chef, you know, you're going to a sauna once, you know, once in a while, or whatever that looks like. Or what does your family and relationship look like? Are you going out on date nights? Like, tell me a little bit about that. Do you like where you live? Would you move? There's so many different categories of life that we kind of start to talk about to actually see, you know, how would your finances impact those areas if we could add a little more value to each of those spaces, or add, you know, $100 or $200 a month towards something that would make your life feel a little bit more sufficient or enhanced, right? And then from there, I think that's where the accountability and the high touch plays a big role into that, because as we're taking a look at what they're spending, I can usually see what they really value in life. And I'll start to ask questions, you know, I see that you spend a lot on food. Is that a priority for you? And if they say no, then it's like, well, we need to reevaluate how much you're spending in food, because that's a huge portion of where your money's going.
I love the way that you phrase that, because I think what you're kind of describing is that people don't have to have goals that have to be huge. Like, it doesn't have to be something ginormous, like buy a second home or retire by the age of 40. And even though those goals are wonderful, I think what you're saying is that people can kind of start small and just make those little changes in their lives that will help to make their lives even better and help to improve them. And I think that's really important. So I love that you really focus on that and show that change or improvement doesn't have to be massive. Of course it can, but it can also start small.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing, is your rich life doesn't have to be some ginormous, like flying private jets around or renting the Maserati and Capri or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be that. If that's not what you value or what you like, then let's keep it small and simple and just start with the things that you do really like and love.
Yeah. And that reminds me of something that I actually had a realization about pretty recently, which is I finally hired a house cleaner to come monthly back in April, and it's been one of the best decisions that I've ever made and one of the best things that I've spent my money on. And so now I'm at the point where I'm like, I would love to get to the point where I can have them come weekly and I don't have to wait just once a month for them to come. I would love to be able to bring them in on a weekly basis. And so something like that reminds me of what you're describing here, of just having something small that doesn't have to be that big private jet, but something that really improves your overall well-being, happiness, and contentment within life.
Yeah, I love that. And I think so much of the time we work around the expectations of what either society is telling us is what we should be looking at goal-wise, or what family or friends are doing around us. And we don't actually take a moment to ourselves and kind of have that life coach moment where you actually decide, like, what do you want?
Yeah.
And that it's okay if you don't want to buy a house and you just want to rent because that is more convenient for your lifestyle. Or, you know, if you don't want to buy a car or start a family, or if you, the house cleaner is the way you want to spend your time, not everybody wants to spend their Saturdays cleaning the depths of their bathroom, right?
Yeah. And I think that's really great, is to just kind of think about all these different things that can go into it. Business and marketing advice meets laughing so hard you cry. Meet one of my business besties, Liz Teresa. Liz has been building amazing websites and unforgettable brands for more than a decade, and now has decided to share her genius with all of you. Every month, Liz is teaching on super helpful topics, from Canva to newsletters and everything in between, to get your creative juices flowing and more clients and customers rolling in. Check out her upcoming classes at lizteresa.com/academy. That's lizteresa.com/academy. See you there. And it also made me want to go back to the point you mentioned earlier, where when you were starting to speak with different financial advisors, they were talking about investing your money into all of these different things and trying to sell you products. But your big goal was really just to pay down the debt that you had. And I think that's a lot of things that a lot of people can relate to right now, especially millennials, which I know is the demographic you work with a lot. And so for anyone who may be in that situation right now where they have some debt and they want to pay it down, no matter what type of debt it may be, what would you recommend they do for starting points?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I do with, you know, anybody that has kind of debt as a top priority is being able to look at the debt and list it out in front of you. I think so much of the time we put it off, or we don't look at the bank statements, or we just make the minimum payments and set it and forget it. And I think really bringing it to the surface and being able to see it all in one place, and then being able to really understand the interest rates around it and what is a priority. There's kind of two ways that the financial world looks at debt too, psychologically. One is the debt snowball, where you would pay off everything lowest amount first, not interest rate. So the lowest balance you have, so say you have a credit card with $1,000 on it, you'd focus on that for paying all that off first, and then work your way up to paying off, you know, whether it's a student loan at $10,000 or more credit cards at $20,000, whatever that looks like, you would pay it off smallest to largest. Or you have the avalanche where you pay off the highest interest rate first, and then work your way to the lowest interest rate. And I would say on that side of things, I would really have you take a step back and figure out what motivates you more, because the person that wants to be more financially positive, the avalanche is the way to go, right? Like, pay off the highest interest rate first. But for some people, that actually isn't motivating for them. If they don't see something getting chipped away at faster, it actually doesn't create motivation. So if you're somebody that likes to see progress, then the snowball tends to be the way to go.
Interesting. So I like that there's two different approaches that you outline, really depending on what people's goals are and what they feel like will help to, like you said, help keep them accountable and motivated moving forward.
Yeah. And I think if you have an accountability partner or coach or somebody that you're working with, the avalanche for sure could be the way to go. But if you're trying to DIY it, the snowball is kind of that easier route where you can start to say, all right, I paid that off, move on to the next thing, and then put all your money in towards that.
Absolutely. One phrase that I've heard a few times throughout the past year, I'd say online, is that not all debt is bad debt. Would you agree with that statement? And I'm sure that's also like depends on the situation and what exactly the debt is. But what are your thoughts on that?
I think that phrase is dangerous in the hands of the wrong people, because for the most part, debt is not going to support you. But there are good things if you're investing in assets that can help you. Example, an investment property or real estate or things that are actually going to be beneficial for you to have and own that debt. I think sometimes we take it a step further and saying, yeah, I'm borrowing from the bank and it's not high interest rate, so it's okay debt, right? And I think we have to really think about, the banks and the system setting us up to make money for them. And if it is a situation where you need to borrow it and maybe you're starting a business or you're needing that support, then great. And you look at it for your situation specifically, but not as like a general statement all around.
Yes. And I love that example you just gave about how banks kind of use our debt to help them make money. Because I remember a few years ago when I bought my car, I wanted to put a certain amount of money down as a down payment. And I remember the car salesman said something along the lines of, oh, are you sure you want to put that much down? Because the rate is so low that it's kind of like borrowing for free right now. And I said, I'm sure that I would like to put this much money down. And so I think, I mean, pretty much what he was saying is exactly what you're just talking about, where they're kind of hoping to get people to have more debt, because obviously the more money they owe them, the more money the whoever the creditor is making in the long run.
Yeah. And I think being able to really look at that piece of your financial planning is huge, whether it's the mortgage company, the car service, whether you're buying financial products, all of that, really understanding the fees and expenses that are going into what they're selling you. And that's the hard part. And why I love doing what I'm doing is because I really have taken a step back and said, I'm going to be your unbiased financial partner in this. You pay me directly annually based on the fact that I get to be your partner. I'm not looking to make a dollar off of you outside of that, right? Like, I don't make commission off of anything else that we sell. I'm just purely making recommendations and helping you navigate your finances along with the emotions of that as well.
Absolutely. And so what we talked about earlier was having a budget. And I know that that strategy can really help people to achieve a lot of things, whether it's paying off their debt or reaching a bigger goal with their financial ability. And so when someone's looking to build a budget, or like you mentioned, other phrases, cash flow management, allocations, whatever it might be, what would you recommend people do when they're actually ready to sit down and say, okay, I'm ready to make a plan?
In a sense of the budget?
Yes. Like when someone's ready to start a budget, but they're like, I don't even know where to begin with starting one. What would you recommend to them?
It's going to start small and it's going to start messy. I wish I could like show you the piece of paper where like I sat down and did my first budget, because it was like, oh, my income is $5,000 a month and my expenses are two. I should have $3,000 at the end of the month. And it was like, it was messy. And I look back at that now and I would go, that it was inaccurate and it wasn't exact and but it was a start, right?
Yes.
So sitting down and really just looking at, what are you expecting income wise? Simple as that, right? And then start to break down your fixed expenses of what are the things that you have to pay for no matter what. Understanding those, I think, is the easiest first step, because most people know them.
And then underneath that, really breaking down what are the unexpected variable expenses that could come up in our day to day or month to month? And what are those fluctuations that they could range from? And then also putting in, I know a lot of people like putting in the savings at the top, like pay yourself first. But I think understanding those fluctuations and then just being able to see what should you be saving at the end of the month and what is that rate actually break down to. And then you can start to say, okay, I want my savings rate to be higher, or my savings rate is good, so how can I adjust those other things in life, or how could we negotiate the cable bill or start to pay attention to our groceries a little bit more or focus on other things that could help adjust that savings and investing rate a little bit more.
And I like that you, in what you just described, that you're talking about that pretty much it's kind of like give and take. So being able to take from one part of your budget in order to allocate to another part in order to help you get closer to reaching those goals. And I think that's a really smart approach to take, is just being proactive in that aspect and kind of always having your pulse on things that are happening with your money and making those adjustments as need be.
Yeah, that's literally what we're doing with every single client, is helping them be more proactive than reactive and planning for all life's ups and downs, the fun vacations that we want to take, the unexpected car maintenance that's needed, the bathroom explosion that breaks through the wall. All those things are going to come up. And how can we do our best to just say, yeah, our savings rate is good and we're investing what we need to be invested in, and we have the emergency fund in case life happens.
Yeah, I love that. For an analogy that I was just thinking of, I know that people in the health and wellness space will sometimes say that when someone goes on a diet and restricts themselves, it potentially leads to them overindulging and kind of going way past what they were doing before because they were just restricted for so long. And so I kind of have a two-pronged question based on that, is do you see that same stuff happening ever with people where they might restrict themselves so much in their budget that eventually they just kind of overspend way more than what they were planning for? And if so, do you have any recommendations on how people can prevent that from happening?
Yes. So I see it all the time, especially with, I think, a lot of coaches in the space right now too, that will promote the no spend month or frugal February or whatever it is that, you know, they come up with some fancy fun term, but then you start to put off everything. And then all of a sudden the next month it all hell breaks loose because you didn't buy socks and you couldn't buy underwear and you really need that gift for a friend. And it just adds up really quickly. It's that same binge mentality after a diet. So what I like to say in the beginning is the first few months of doing this, you're really just collecting data.
Yeah.
I don't want to change anything unless there's something really big that is not sustainable. Most of the time, I'm not trying to pay off debt really, really fast, or I'm not trying to cut shopping expenses. I just want to see where money's going and what the fluctuations are. So that's kind of the dip your toe into the water that makes it feel a little bit more sustainable to keep doing. It's like doing monthly. And I hate also saying that too, because I think sometimes people go, well, I had to do a monthly budget. I'm like, yes, but it's 5 minutes and it's not right. Like it may be forever, but that takes what, an hour out of your year that you have to look at your money so that you're not wondering at the end of the year where everything went. So I think that first kind of 3 month part of just collecting data is good for people to just feel like it's sustainable. Right. The next part is then really saying, okay, based on all our goals, is that something we want to continue, or are there things we need to be more aware of and think more consciously when we spend about whether that's a good decision or not, or does it support, again, our values and goals that we want to get to?
Exactly. And I think it's really smart that you recommend that people kind of take a few months to observe and see what's happening before actually going in and creating that budget. Because like you mentioned earlier, I mean, there's different times of year where people are spending more than they are during other points, like summer or the holiday season. And so if someone's looking to start a budget in the summer where maybe they went to a handful of weddings and they went on vacation with their family and therefore their spending was more, I mean, that's not exactly quite accurate to use as that budgeting standpoint because of the fact that it's kind of like an outlier. So I think that's a really great suggestion to start with like a few months and get a scope of a few months worth of expenses and cash flow and all of that stuff, and then use that to plan the budget moving forward.
Yeah, it's nice to have a baseline that you can say, okay, expected should be whatever that number is, right? Mm-hmm. But then being able to say, you know, in July, we know we love to take vacations and that's important to us. So we're going to be spending more. But then how can you also think ahead too, so that next June or July, we've been putting $200 or $300 away a month so that it doesn't hit as hard.
Right. Yeah, I love that idea. One of the things, Jen, that I love to ask all of our guests when they come on the show is what their favorite local businesses are to support. Because, of course, here at Massachusetts Business Network, we love being able to show our support for businesses across the state. And so it's always so fun to hear what guests have to say. So I'd love to hear where you like to shop at and recommend.
So I just found Good Karma Candle. She's local to Boston, and she helped make a lot of client gifts for me recently. And her candles are and smell so good and so aesthetically pleasing. I really love them. And then I also will say, can I do like a coaching business?
Absolutely.
Cool. Julie Costa Coaching has changed my life. She does hypnotherapy and hypno breath work. And I think if we're talking even just money in general, right, everything is emotional, and our mm-hmm. subconscious beliefs and thoughts, even though we consciously want things, seem to get in the way. And she really helps support on all levels of subconscious reprogramming and just understanding goals and what you want. So I've worked with her and she's absolutely fabulous.
I love that. Jen, you've shared such amazing pieces of advice in regards to money management and how people can feel like they're in better control of their finances. And so I'd love if you could share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Yeah. So my website is baseplanning.co. It is CO. It's a fun one that gets mixed up all the time. And Instagram handle is at jen.e.reed, which is R-E-I-D. And email is jen@baseplanning.co. So if you have questions, I'm happy to answer anything too through an email or other social media platforms as well.
Fabulous. And I'll share those in the show notes that way our listeners can click through and connect with you from there. But thank you so much again for coming on today's show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.